Welcome to the Drunk Guys Book Club, where books aren't just for school, where book clubs aren't just for women, and chaos is beer.
I'm Mike.
I'm Nate.
I'm Jimmy.
And we're the Drunk Guys, and this week we're reading 12 Rules for Life. That's an antidote for chaos. The antidote for chaos?
I mean, who cares?
An antidote for chaos by Michael B. Jordan B. Peterson. And Nate's starting with a beer.
So, okay. So I would say, wouldn't you say, that Jordan Peterson, he has a very high opinion of himself. So yeah. Don't you think he'd call himself a whiz? This beer is called Whiz.
Whiz. Like piss?
Yeah, W-H-I-Z by other half. It's a double dry hopped into pale ale. And there is definitely on the front, there are pictures of what is definitely Cheese Whiz.
All right.
Nobody beats it.
Tastes like beer. Not like Whiz. Though it is a similar color.
Really?
It's yellow.
Oh.
That was a joke.
I forgot what color Cheese Whiz was. I thought it was like a weird Cheeto orange.
Oh yeah, it's definitely bright orange. As you can see, the
delicious.
It looks like Golden's mustard.
Yeah, it's mustard, but cheese. Like it's the dream.
Oh, of course, the antidote for hot dog chaos.
Hot dog chaos.
That's a great band name. Really niche gay porno. Hot dog chaos. So this was mine and Nate's co-punishment book for Jimmy, because we know Jimmy's a big JBP fan. So we picked, this was one of two books that we're going to read this year.
I can't believe there's 12 more rules. He summed up all the rules for living in these 12.
Did you not read the introduction?
I did, but I've blocked it
out. The introduction's incredible. There are 40 rules, but
there's 40 rules on his, because he got into this
on
because
Quora.
I was like, you know what? When I read that, I was like, of course he started off on Quora. Fucking asshole.
So on Quora, he was like, I was just started putting, answers to questions. He's like, Holocaust, was it real? Not really. And then he puts his answers to whatever he's putting up there.
Who can say?
It's a lot of petrol is required. So he got involved answering questions on Quora as a hobby, like what any responsible adult does.
and he liked all the attention it got him.
And that was it.
I better burn down the earth now.
He got a lot of upvotes for somebody wrote a question that was like somebody with the username Peter B. Jordan posted the question, what are 12 give or take rules for life or something like that? And then he wrote his 40 rules because he can't contain himself. And he posted the 40 rules. And he's like, and some of them were kind of tongue in cheek. And I can't remember what the fuck that, like, they were pretty dumb. Like, always pet a cat.
Yeah, that's one of these.
That's one of the rules.
I think it's number 11.
It's the last one. Like, he made 40 and he slimmed it down to 12 and he kept that one.
Let me find that the example is, because he clearly is going to be doing all of them. The second book. Some of them were tongue in cheek, like be grateful in spite of your suffering. Is the example like, oh, okay. But he put his list and he got, 100,000 re-quoras or whatever the heck, what the fuck it's called on there.
Yeah. Quorum. Who knows? Incel points.
And he liked it a lot. Which I have to say, anytime I've looked for something and Quora is the top page of Google results, it is the worst information.
And there's always one answer in the thread that's about how the Nazis did nothing wrong.
That's what I'm usually searching for. So any self-help book where the inspiration is a Quora post, you should be a little skeptical of. But
you might, and he didn't even explain how Babby is formed.
Babby?
What?
You've never seen that? No. Somebody asked on Quora,
oh, God.
Is Babby formed?
Yeah. Isn't Quora like where it's like, is I pregnant and shit like that?
Yes.
So that's who gave the world this guy, is because those people clicked, I like this man's words, and now we have to suffer through a million weird dudes
So he would not have been famous at all, nor not famous enough to have a book deal if he didn't, like, because he's Canadian. After Canada was going to make law about trans people, and he came out and said, well, that means you have to blah, blah, blah. He came out on this, like,
so the law was going to say, was going to require people to use the pronouns of somebody's choosing, that to not use them would be illegal.
That's what he said the law said. The law said it just added gender identity to non-discrimination things in employment and housing.
So he's doing, like, a test case, I guess. Like, well, you know, if a person comes in and says, I want to rent an apartment, and you say, no, sir, you can't. Say, actually, it's ma'am. And it's like, I won't call you that. But he got all mad.
And, basically went on a rant and said, I would rather go to jail than engage in, you know, forced speech. It's like, none of this is really happening, dude. And then he became champion of unhappy men everywhere and weird girls.
Well, he came up at the right moment, too.
Yeah.
You know, like, the way YouTube and social media in general worked. And also, it was like...
And also, Fox News was looking for somebody to put on TV to be like, hey, he's going to say the stuff we want to say. We're journalists.
There are a lot of disaffected young men in, you know, the West. And for reasons both within and without their control. And they're like, this guy's talking to me, man, the forgotten man. And so they clung to him, and he became rather messianic for a lot of dudes.
Oh, yeah.
And hence he wrote his self-help book. So that's what this is. Now, I would say, honestly, the 12 rules are fine.
There's
nothing
fine.
Wrong with the rules. They are innocuous.
The first sentence where he says what the rule is, that's perfectly great. Fine, totally unobjectionable.
And usually the last of the chapter, paragraph of the chapter where he actually gets to talking about the rule.
I would suggest, actually, the better book to read, and this might be the only time this sentence is ever said, ever, is the Quora post. If you just read the Quora post, you get the important part. You actually get an extra 24 rules, but you get that, and you get none of the weird mythology, psychoanalysis stuff, and stories about his fictional friends.
Fictional friends and probably fictional patients.
Oh, yeah. I like we need to go in order, but my favorite was the patient who claimed she thought she'd been raped.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Do you remember this, Nate? This is later in the book. You might have been skimming extra hard at this point.
Oh, I was listening at 2x speed at this point.
I can't even imagine Jordan Peterson's voice, because I assume he read it.
Oh, yeah, he read it.
Him at 2x speed would be...
He spent about half of it yelling.
Oh, yeah. Only
and
half?
At one point, he started to break down crying.
Oh, that's normal.
He was literally... He was almost crying.
Wait, are you saying he cried in his own audiobook?
Yes. Or he was about to. You could tell, like, the part he was reading, he was just so moved by his own words.
What a fucking dick.
But then, a lot of times, he was really just yelling. The blah, blah, blah does not live. That's it. That was like a lot of the book.
You know, I will say this was written exactly the way he speaks.
Oh, yeah, I think he dictated. He did not write it. Despite in the epilogue where he talks about stealing a man's pen so he could write a book for the future, he just dictated this. This is just him ranting while he took shits. He was just going like, and another thing, you know, lobsters take dumps. And then he just went off.
That's a quick 400 pages.
This woman came to his office and she, you know, as his clinical practice.
Because before he did all this, he was an actual psychologist, and by all accounts, he was apparently pretty well respected. He's not a dumb person. He's obviously something's wrong with him, but he's not a bad psychologist objectively. And those are the only parts of this book where
I'm gonna object to that. Actually.
I mean, now who knows? Like, back then, he was apparently like decently respected in his field, not world
so
famous. Just, but
he
okay.
might. So I'm sure he did fine.
Yeah.
Talking to people and helping them out. I'm sure he did fine. But so I, you know, took Psych 101 the first semester of freshman year of college, and so I know everything. No, what I mean is my psychology professor. I don't remember a ton from the class, but I remember he was adamant that Freud was bullshit.
Oh, yeah.
He was like, Freud is total garbage. It is the worst. And Jordan Peterson loves Freud. And he like bases
not as
much
all
as
of
he
loves Carl Jung.
Yeah, that's but Jung, it was a student of Freud. Dick. So it's really like kind of the same thing.
Jung puts all the magic shit into it. So
Jung has the archetypes and all this.
The collective
a lot of mythology stuff, yeah. Kind of like proto-Joseph Campbell. Like, there's a reason why he all tells these stories. Yeah, exactly. And the answers are there in your alphabet soup. It'll tell you all. Yeah, but Joseph Campbell, the hero of a thousand faces,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
wrote that popular book.
But
about
Jung
like
was a student
ago.
Of Freud, and so if you really love Jung, you're really like basing it on Freud's theory, which is bullshit.
Yeah, Freud at this point has been pretty much no one believes the things that like he.
Except for Jordan Peterson.
Little bits. Yeah, Jordan Peterson is a crazy person.
I don't know enough, honestly. And I feel like because we have to have some discussion, I'm going to have to be the one to defend Jordan Peterson, which is an unenviable position.
You don't have to.
Well, it's just not fun if we all shit on it the same way. It's better if we shit on it different ways as a listening experience.
Surround but, shitting.
Yeah. Shitting in the round. But I would just say, none of us fucking know. And I feel like Joe Rogan saying that. But I don't know shit about Freud. But people still talk about him all the goddamn time. So he's important and influential, even if his particular ideas turned out to not be correct as he stated them. I don't know how wrong they are. Were they like wrong in detail or wrong in entirety?
The things of his that people still fuck with are like talking to a patient and like this conversational kind of thing. Like he did that. And that's
fine. But like analyzing dreams and the Oedipus complex.
All of his like, you know, anal stage, mom titty stage stuff is all like that shit doesn't fly anymore. But like
I can't
the
be
process,
untrue to me. I talk about mommy milkers all the time. Like that is clearly a real stage of development.
You're stalled in the booby stage or whatever the fuck.
The mommy milker stage. My favorite gross guy on the internet phrase right now. Yeah. So anyway, I don't know. And I also honestly don't know the difference between Jung and Freud, except that they are not the same guy. So I know my like shaking a hobo on the train and asking him if he knows the difference understanding is that Jung has more of the collective unconsciousness and thinks that stories and human experiences have these archetypical forms that are so vague that of course you're going to find them in some form, you know? The hero who goes on a journey. Okay, yeah.
And like, that's Peterson's big thing, is that no matter what we're doing, where we are, the myths that ancient peoples have still explain everything today or apply or they're still happening or some bullshit. I don't know. I'm going to drink this fucking beer. I'm drinking this beer because it's my favorite beer. And Jordan Peterson is one of my least favorite people. That's my connection.
That's not fair. There must be people you hate much. I mean,
I said
you
one
have
of,
a, I would say
one of.
You have a very strong hatred for this person.
Because I have a lot of friends that like him. This is Golden
Jimmy
Monkey.
Just being a contrarian douche.
That's
you're
what
a hater
Peterson does.
On a fine, upstanding Canadian success.
Fine young cannibals. This is Golden Monkey, and it's, you know, they don't make Belgians anymore. No one does it. But I still like him, even though this is from Pennsylvania.
Well, the Belgians were, you know, collaborators.
So the first thing you should know about Jordan Peterson is that...
we don't talk about Jordan Peterson.
Yes.
And the second rule...
If he says a fact in this book, there's a 75% chance that it is not true.
He's very lawyery in the way he states things.
He gets very... He's one of those debate guys who likes to debate, but he often hedges what he's saying so that when someone says, like, what are you saying? You're saying this? He's like, no, I'm not saying that. Of course, you should listen to what I say. Because then he goes on for, you know, 2 minutes of word salad. And he's like, what the fuck are you talking about, man? He's like, you're not even, you know, you got to pay attention, blah, blah, blah. He's a bullshit artist.
There are clips where, like, is the Garden of Eden a true story? And his answer will be like, what do you mean by true? It's like, did it happen? And then he'll go, well, it all depends on what happen means. In this case, in a Jungian sense, does happen mean it happened in physical, metaphysical terms even? Like Dostoevsky? And then he kind of like goes into the world of, let me throw a lot of shit at you. Yeah. Let me throw a lot of other names that you definitely don't know everything about every one of those names. So you're going to be like, ooh, I feel insecure. I can't question all of this right now.
What's that fallacy where you just throw so much bullshit at them that they can't even like disprove it because there's too much? I don't know.
I don't know what it's called.
I think that's the Trump fallacy.
Yeah. Peterson's been doing it for a long time. There was a video of him on the last, I think it was the last time he was on Rogan. And he's just like, there's no such thing as climate. Climate isn't a thing. It's like, and even Joe Rogan's like, what the fuck are you talking about? It's like, climate can't be a thing because it's everything and that's too many things. And, you know, so it can't be a thing. And he's like, what? This is all his attempt to say that climate change isn't real because climate isn't real. And what is the environment anyway? Because the environment is, well, everything. And if it can't be everything, so therefore, and he's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
This sounds like he's trying to debate by just confusing the troll under the bridge. Like, you don't answer his riddle at all. You just like, I don't know how many, where is St. Ives? Then, oh, what do you mean? It's like, how can I know how many wives are going?
So, speaking of which, the book is called, Antidote to Chaos. And in the very first, in the introduction or the very first chapter, he talks about, you know, there's order and then there's chaos. And then you have to walk the line between order and chaos. But when he says, like, what order is and what chaos is, they're so vague that it's really like order is anything you like and it's good. Chaos is anything you don't like and it's bad, except that chaos is feminine. He says specifically, he introduces it multiple times, that chaos is represented as feminine. And it was like more,
it felt like Dan Brown.
it did. Well, yeah, for sure. But then I was like, is he going to say even a single nice thing about women in the entire book?
No.
And I don't think so. I mean, I have not actually finished Rule 12, so I'm not quite done with the book, but I'm pretty close.
He says that they exist to make men nicer.
Well, when he says, like, well, men might have ruled the world, but women were there supporting them. So that's kind of the nicest thing he says about women.
Women are born, as in the feminine way, chaotically with two breasts, but men are also born with two hands, which is order. And that is where women come in as the taming beast to the also the order of men. Yeah, I don't know if he said anything about women in a positive way, but it is...
No, he hates women.
It is weird assertions. I mean, there's also shit where it's like... I mean, this is throughout the whole rule. Like, so that's kind of like the frame, is that the world is made up of these two opposing forces, order and chaos, which is such a general statement that you have to kind of go, sure it is, but that's also not really useful information because it doesn't clarify anything.
Also, sometimes it isn't. Peanut butter and jelly are not order and chaos. Anytime he lists two things, he calls it order and chaos.
Crunchy peanut butter, Jimmy.
Oh, that's chaos.
But trans fat, which is, you know,
I'm not
going
to call
it
by the gender it wants to be known as.
I think it's not a fat; it's a carbohydrate. But he has all the list of things, and that's how he's going to view the world and all of his rules. Once he gives the rule, and you read it, and you're like, sure.
You know, stand up straight.
Right. And then he's going to explain why.
But first, he's going
to... I actually... one chapter, I wanted to try to make a map of his thought process. Because...
You can't do it.
He makes an assertion. That's all it is. That's what self-help books usually are. They're not very scientific, typically. They're just rules that worked for some person or really packaged versions of guidelines that worked for some person. And so he makes them that are going to help you navigate the order and chaos of the world and create more order and to avoid more chaos. And so he'll say something like, so rule number one, which is a fine rule, stand up straight with your shoulders back. It's like advice from a 1951 gym class video. And it's like, we will never beat the Reds with that posture, Jimmy. And then so that's kind of what the rule is. And you go, okay. So this is rule one. He's just getting started. He says you should stand up with good posture. Why? Lobsters.
kings of posture.
Yeah.
The king, yeah, the things that don't stand up straight. And I don't know if they even have shoulders.
No, not really. They have a carapace. They don't even have fucking bones.
They have tails. And then you're like, okay, lobsters. He goes on about how lobsters are like the first line is, if you are like most people, you don't often think about lobsters.
He is correct. One of the few times he is correct.
Then he goes about them and how they have they fight a lot, and you're like, okay, this is getting somewhere. A page and a half later, I'll just read the last like part of the second story. Where he's talking about the problem can remain many lobsters. What if two of them occupy the same territory at the bottom of the ocean at the same time, and they both want to live there? What if there are hundreds of lobsters, or all trying to make a living and raise a family in the same crowded patch of sand and refuse?
I like that they other have creatures a job have this problem scenario. Too.
When songbirds come north in the spring, what the fuck? So you go from lobsters at the bottom of the ocean floor to the wren, the songbird, not at the ocean floor. Mm.
The lobsters of the sky, though.
That is what they are known as, actually. That's what wren is from the Latin for
sky lobster
of the sky. Sky lobster. And he basically, in this whole chapter, goes through this tortured effort to show that, like, evolutionarily, because lobsters do a certain thing, we also have that genetic legacy, right? Because lobsters fight. And what ends up happening is the lobster that wins the fight is like, oh, I rock, and I'm more confident in my next conflict. And the lobster that loses the fight becomes a pussy for life. So if you're a human, you should act confident, and it will just make you generate confidence because you will be successful, and that will breed more confidence and more success. He's just like every other self-help book where they just repackage shit that somebody else already said. He's just saying, fake it till you make it. That's all the rule is.
But this is also great. Where he, in his own fashion, has to one-up it and use a lot of science stuff that he does not get or is lying about. I don't know. But he goes a whole thing about how, like, the lobster has, you know, serotonin, and, you know, humans have serotonin in it also. And in which point he calls it the most fundamental neurochemical, which is not a thing.
I mean, that's like advertising when they could say it because it's not, like, provable.
It's like, the most.
Like, they can't say America's number one chewing gum, but they could say, like,
up there with them.
But they'll say something like, the chewing gum kids like.
Yeah,
they do. Where it's like, well, some several kids like it.
But he's like talking about, you know, the lobsters, they, you know, they get slink off and they fight. But if you give that lobster serotonin, he gets strong and brave and he'll go out and fight again. Like, if you stand up for yourself, you have serotonin, it makes you happy.
And if you give it lemon butter, you'll be happy. So, okay. Also, the thing with the lobster thing. So, Jordan Peterson's like point is that, you know, lobsters fight with each other. The ones that win, they get all the women. They get all the female lobsters.
The bitches.
Yeah, they,
yes,
get
they do.
The lob bitches.
Ooh.
And so that's his point. So that's why it's like you should stand up straight. So that, because life is a competition and you need to be, you know, if you ever want to find a woman, you got to, you have to be tough. So here's the thing.
He knows his audience.
Humans, if there's anything, sure, humans do compete, but if there's anything that really defines like the human experience, it's actually cooperation, not competition. Yes, there is competition, but really humans cooperate together. We have such innate things that make us want to like form a group and be with other people and get along with each other. And sure, we'll fight somebody who's not in our group, but like, we basically want to get along with people. So really, humans are a lot more like ants than lobsters.
Yes.
And we're not exactly like ants either.
Well, he would never say ants larger. Because ants are communists. So
that's true.
I mean, they are. They're absolutely communists. Yeah.
Though at the time he wrote this, Canada did still technically have a queen. But Nate, yeah, that's true. But humans do compete, and at a certain point,
sure, your decisions, yeah,
you come to a competition of some sort. One person gets the job. One person gets the girl or the guy or the whatever. One person gets to win. So the competition is always there. Even if we compete, even if we cooperate a lot of the time or cooperate for the stuff that doesn't matter, I think he's referring to the fact, like, in those moments, those inflection points of competition, you don't want to look like the wimpy, shitty lobster.
Yeah, sure. Good advice, definitely. Except lobsters are not really why we should do that.
Jordan Peterson, besides the order and chaos thing, the other thing that he really loves and wants to reinforce over and over again is hierarchies are natural and therefore good. People need to be, some people need to be on top and the others are meant to serve.
So I see what you're saying, Jimmy. And again, because I want to disagree with you because I think you're a communist. but could it be read that his point is to get people to be better at competing in those hierarchies? Not because you're supposed to be in a certain position, but like at a certain point, we all do fall into hierarchies of some sort or another in most measurable things. Here's some advice to help you fare better in it.
Yes,
that's not the
certainly
insidious racist thing you're implying.
No. Of all the things he does, I don't think he is a racist, really. Definitely hates women, but I don't think he's not really racist. But he, time and time again, not just in this rule, he constantly brings up hierarchies are good, and people who try and, if you try to break down the hierarchies, that's chaos, and then the world will end. So if you fighting back or something, or like he complained about, you know, the civil rights movement, people complaining, you know.
It was those states' rights, Jimmy.
That was a different civil rights movement.
remember when Rand Paul also said the civil rights movement was wrong?
Yeah, that is...
like 10, 12 years ago. And everyone was like, okay, yeah, I get it. On a debate team, you're right. But read the fucking room, guy.
I think you said we don't need the Civil Rights Act. I think that's what he was saying. Yeah, we just don't need the Civil Rights Act anymore.
Yes.
And a bunch of people were like, go on. Anyway, we're getting a lot of lobster stuff.
Anyway, that was chapter one.
Right. But I think, here's what I think his problem is as a writer, among many other problems. But
he's got worse diarrhea than Stephen King.
He has mouth oral dysentery. Like he might die from it. It's
oral E. coli.
Oh, ooh. That sounds like an old old-timey baseball player. Yeah. Oral E. coli. He's the first Italian to play for the Dodgers. So he's trying to do like an Aesop's fable kind of thing.
He fucking
he's like,
loves
here's
those,
a story.
I'm sure.
Let me tell you a story. No, Aesop was a slave and not to be trusted. But he wants to tell a story to support his what the hell were they called in Aesop's fables? Moral, right? Stand up straight and with your shoulders back. And then he tells the fable of the lobster. The lobster and the lobster. The worst of Aesop's fables. Mm. But he has horrendous word diarrhea and he can't stop for 39 pages. And then he desperately wants to be taken seriously as a thinker. So he kind of does the thing that you did in high school when your teacher's like, you must cite three sources. And you're just like, oh, I got to fucking squeeze a citation in somewhere. And you just put it in there, even though it doesn't really make sense or help. He does a lot of that.
Yeah.
Like there are a lot of citations in this book and only some of them are his other book. He's trying to like make it look substantial.
He's trying to do PhD level philosophy or political science.
Right. Well,
and he doesn't have the training for that.
And so it comes off as just
I never stopped him before.
And every time he starts another rule, I feel like I'm wandering into the fog.
Of course.
This is Wandering into the Fog from a brewery that Jimmy would say is named after this book, Abomination Brewing Company.
Mm-hmm.
I went downstairs to get another one so I could have two. And my wife was like, what the fuck? It's a fucking Thursday. How many beers are you having? I was like, okay, it's enough, I guess. And I was just going to do it again later. Like, goddamn bitch. just like Jordan says, always stopping me from my order.
Many times in the book, Jordan Peterson uses the example of, you know, when your wife cheats on you, or, you know, when your wife is unfaithful.
It's very L. Ron Hubbard-y.
I wonder if he was drawing from experience there.
I don't know. I think he's found a successful, I think he's been with his wife for like ever.
Yeah, he mentions her in the book many times. I don't think he gives her name, though.
She doesn't like deserve
Mrs.
a name.
Mrs. Peterson.
I think it's like Tammy or some shit.
Mrs. B. Peterson.
Oh. I think you're right. It might be Tammy, actually.
Tammy B. Peter woman.
I got a Peter for you right here, son.
In this first chapter, also, one other thing, he does a thing often where he asserts something, and you're like, oh, okay, I guess so. But sometimes these are things that other people know something about, like, this isn't true. So then you have to wonder how much of this other stuff isn't true. It turns out a lot of it. But he's talking about the yin and the yang, because he says in the beginning of the book, he's like, I've done a lot of, you know, religious research, and mostly the Bible, cough, cough. Yeah, just kidding. It's all the fucking Bible. And dabbling here in the other ones. But, you know.
Well, it's mostly the Bible, except some of that pesky Jew shit.
Yeah.
He leaves some of that out. It's like all Jesus.
Yeah.
It's Adam and Eve and then Jesus. Everything.
And Cain and Abel. A lot of Cain and Abel.
Oh, Cain and Abel, yeah.
But absolutely. He talks about the yin and the yang. It's like the yin and the yang are order and chaos, because he says, you know, the dot on the other side means that it's one can be transformed into the other at any time. And like the yin and yang does not mean that at all. That's not what it is. It's about the duality of all things, where he's like, all things are like just two sides of everything, and like one can't exist without the other. That's how duality works. But none of it is like, this is about order and chaos and transformation from order and chaos. It's like, it could be order
that's
and chaos.
That's one of many examples of duality.
What it means. But he just asserts these things.
Well, it's like you could say, hey, the yin and the yang, which is like, that's a Taoist idea, right? Like, there's order and chaos. There's weak and strong, or strong and weak.
They are technically, I think it's, there is a masculine and feminine, but I think he gets them wrong.
But like, they're presented as kind of individual pairs, right?
Yeah.
They're examples of yin and yang, weak and strong, masculine, feminine. Order, chaos. And he just kind of reads them down in the column instead. And he's like, oh, order, strong, masculine, this, that, that's yin. It's like, no, that's not what that meant. he has the understanding of the Eastern, you know, philosophy, the same level as somebody who would have a yin-yang tattoo would have.
That's the same that person got like a stupid white girl tattooed on their arm. Says, like, beautiful living blossom.
Yeah, yeah. He knows very little.
Soup dumplings, $12. Yeah.
It's like, well, Confucius, well, you know, for all of his flaws as a Chinaman, had interesting thoughts.
He would have loved Confucius, because Confucius was all about...
Confucius was not...
Do your fucking job and stay, do what the government says.
And women listen to your husbands.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so there's a thing there about... There's something else in here that he did that I thought was really ridiculous in the second chapter.
Rule two, treat yourself like someone you are responsible for helping.
You know, that's actually a really good piece of advice.
Perfectly,
I'll say, as a parent.
Sure, yeah. All of the rules are perfectly
a really good
fine
piece of advice.
By themselves.
Totally. I do like his story about how people are better at filling prescriptions for their pets than they are for themselves. So it's like, yeah, you know what? Good point.
Yeah.
So he goes into this thing here about etymology, and this is something I've noticed in other quote-unquote philosophers. Like, I'm not going to compare, I'm not saying these guys are interchangeable, but I just watched the masterclass from Cornel West. Have you ever listened to Cornel West speak?
Yeah, a while ago.
It's not that different than Jordan Peterson in some ways, in that
it's a lot of word salad.
It's a lot of word salad, a lot of, Cornel West does a lot of like almost... the preachery kind of thing, where he'll say, well, that's what Brother Dostoevsky said. And you're like, and what? And they'll say things, assertions, and build on the assertions with more assertions, and then they get to a point. So in the Cornel West one, for example, is a recurring thing where he says the word humanity comes from the word humando, which means to bury. He's like, no, it doesn't. It's like demonstrably false. And then he repeats that and like builds and builds and builds on it, keeps recurring to it. And Jordan Peterson plays that game too of fake etymology or etymology that's so vague to not matter. So he talks about, this is why he proves chaos is feminine. Chaos, the unknown, is symbolically associated with the feminine. Assertion. This is partly because all the things we have come to know were born originally of the unknown, just as well, just as all beings we encounter were born of mothers. Chaos is...
This is like Yogi mater. Berra does philosophy.
Yeah, right? Chaos is mater, origin, which means mother in Latin, origin, source, mother. Materia is what you use in Final Fantasy VII to cast spells. Yeah. It's just the substance. But he says materia is the substance from which all things are made. It is also what matters, or what is the matter, the very subject of matter, of thought and communication.
Isn't what? That order? Doesn't sound like chaos. Sounds like everything comes from something. That sounds like order to me, it's not chaos.
But it's like, yes, it's true that those are from a common like Proto-Indo-European root word. But you could find all sorts of bizarre root words. Like, hey, did you know that the root word for, you know, barbarian is beard? It's like, okay.
Yeah, that doesn't he does this shit all the time because he time and time again, just talks about how the ancient wisdoms of peoples are the way we, you know, the myths they tell us how to live our lives. Like, I saw some fucking video of him, like, showing, like, these people, they had this design, this pattern they would draw, and it was these two snakes twisting around each other, and I believe that's them saying they knew what DNA looked like. It's like,
oh,
no, they fucking did not. That's how snakes have sex.
I
pass on their DNA.
Oh,
checkmate.
Shit. Oh, shit.
Burr, burr, burr. Oh, man.
Jordan Peterson would hate the air horn. That is chaos.
It is.
The air horn never brings about order.
The air horn is a dark energy.
The opening much resembles a vagina, which is feminine, I hear.
At its most lax... During the menstrual period is what it resembles most. The center of the bullhorn is the clitoris. It's the only time we're seeking it out.
The only time I can
find
it.
When you can't get pregnant, which is what God is telling us about feminine pleasure. I found that passage about the yin-yang. And my note was, I don't think that's true.
that could be the note for 75% of this book. I don't think that's true.
Shift select whole book. I don't think that's true.
The Taoist juxtaposition of yin and yang, for example, doesn't simply portray chaos and order as the fundamental elements of being. It also tells you how to act. The way the Taoist path of life is represented by or exists on the border between the twin serpents. The way is the path of proper being. I feel, and then he goes, it is the way as referred to by Christ in John 14 and Matthew 7. 4. It's like,
I don't think that is.
No. I'm pretty confident.
Jesus was
not
like, hey, let's all be Taoists.
Because, you know, the Tao of Christ, that famous book.
I think it's a Wu-Tang album.
Yeah, absolutely. But the way as this force in the universe is not something that is prescriptive. It's not something where it's like, these are the 10 rules of the way.
Yeah, it really just boils down to go with the flow.
It's super loose and moment to moment. That's what, like, you know, action through inaction. Like, that's the total opposite of what he's saying here. That's
action is masculine, but inaction is feminine. Because
that is why I prefer my women to be completely inert in bed. I am the one that is ert.
There's this one in the second chapter here. It is woman as nature who looks at half of all men and says, no, for the men, that's a direct encounter with chaos. And it occurs with devastating force every time he's turned down for it. That's what it's fucking about. It's about, you know, not getting on dating apps. Like, yes, men are...
Being 5'11 is respectable. It is just as good as 6 foot. Oh, my God. That's clearly what he's talking about there. I mean, there are actually some crazy surveys that, like, women on dating apps, some study showed that, like, 95% of men, they're like, gross. And then
It was in this book. No, it was at 85%.
And then, like, but like 97% of men, they're like, yeah, I'd fucking hit it. It's like, man, that's a rough world.
That sounds more chaotic to me.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Jesus. So the rule of take care of yourself like it's someone you have to take care of is good advice, because you take care of someone else better because you're responsible to someone. Like, it's easy to delude yourself. It's easy to rationalize to yourself. Why we had to talk about Taoism and snakes, I don't know.
And swiping on Tinder.
Oh, but I did like this line. It should be noted, it should also be noted, finally, his word, finally, that the structure of the brain, oh my God, how did I skip over the line, the androgyny of Christ? It should also be noted, finally, that the structure of the brain itself, at a gross morphological level, appears to reflect this duality. Like, yeah, and it also looks like a fucking walnut. Like, it doesn't mean anything.
It looks like a spaghetti-covered butt.
Why not? Why stop there, Jordan? Like, hey, you know, the duality of the testicles reflect order and chaos. My left one is chaotic. I've had torsion twice. Or, like, lungs, if you don't want to be silly. Or, like, molars. Or if you want to be butt cheeks, like, there are lots of pairs of things in nature.
But one has to be
humans
chaos
do exhibit bilateral symmetry. So we kind of have two of almost everything.
I don't know if you've eaten a lot of Taco Bell, both cheeks are chaos.
Well, this is something where he has another thing he does in his talks. He is a psychologist. Objectively, he went to college for psychology. He's got a PhD, I think, in psychology. But yeah, when he does talks, he will claim to be other things often. He'll be like, well, as a neuroscientist, it's like, that's not the same thing at all. You're not a neuroscientist. And he also claimed to be an evolutionary biologist, which he, of course, is not.
Did he claim to be that in the book? I didn't miss
not,
that.
Not in the book, but he does this in his talks where he'll be like, well, you know, as an evolutionary biologist, you know, you have two butt cheeks, you know, shit like that. So he'll talk about other fields. But he'll kind of, like, imply that
standard,
he's...
I'm an evolutionary biologist.
He just fucking makes shit up.
No, I bet if you watch a video of him from, like, 2014 or something like that, you know, before he really blew up, I bet he's a lot more humble. He's clearly a guy that got very high on his own supply and...
Apparently, there's a really interesting article written by the guy who got him his... I think it was the guy who got him his job at University of Toronto. It's called, like... I used to be one of Jordan Peterson's biggest supporters. Now I think he's dangerous. And it was just like, this is back when he was just a professor. Like, well, it was like the guy is talking about a time when he was just a professor in school, like not on the internet at all. He's written it while, because he's big now. It's like, look, this is what this guy is like. And he's like, you know, you just go to his classes and, you know, he has a big problem with just asserting things as facts that are not. He's always done that. And he's got a lot of, like, negative reviews from a lot of students, but he's also got a good amount of, like, hyper-positive, like, this guy changed my life stuff. And he said he really... this guy was, like, a friend of his, and he would talk about, like, Jordan Peterson was like, I want to buy a church and start doing sermons on Sundays and shit like that. Like, he's really more of a evangelist than a hard, like, professor.
It does sound objectively proto-culty.
Oh, he's definitely, it's definitely, cult-y. Maybe not exactly a cult, but it's cult-esque.
I can't believe it's not cult.
The margarine of cults.
Everyone knows margarine is chaos.
Margarine is chaos. What is that shit? No one knows what margarine it is. What's hydrogenated vegetable oil?
Margarine is chaos. That's like the name of a song by The Explosions in the Sky. Here's an 11-minute instrumental song. It's called Margarine is Chaos.
This one's in 17.4. Fuck you.
So I don't remember So I'd listened to the audiobook, and because almost nothing of what he said has anything to do with any rule the chapter was about, I have most of the things he was talking about, I have no relation to like what he was trying to say or what he's talking about. So I'm just going to mention a couple of things.
Yeah, I mean,
in one,
there's no real order.
Chapter, he tried to
that's
say...
That's the irony of the book, is that there is no order.
It's all chaos.
You have to, it's all actually, you have, to, you, have to read the book, you have to read the book twice. You read it once, you learn the rules, and then the second time you read it, you could impose order on it because of your masculinity.
Yeah. So he tried to prove that men have not been oppressive in history, and his evidence is that a man invented tampons.
Yeah.
Count, that was his evidence. See, they're not the patriarchy.
He said women have never been oppressed.
Some of them were impressed, though. Those tampons are bloody useful. Oh, no pun intended.
Why does he say bloody? He's from fucking Canada. They don't say that there.
But he's from, is he from like Alberta?
Yeah, he's from like Podunk, Alberta.
So maybe they speak a little differently there. But I think
it's something he says to try and sound smarter.
Yeah.
Because
I honestly don't know.
One of the most revealing things of this entire book is when he talks about going to a party in high school and being the lame nerd that everyone's just drinking and yelling and it's all just silly. And I just want to read my books and talk about philosophy. And it's like, wow, you sound like you're a fucking nerd, dude. Like, no wonder you're an asshole now.
This is the town that he described. It's like, it's so cold, like your car freezes to death. Like your car will die.
Yeah.
And also, this is an incredible line when he talks about how shitty the town is. When he talks about the cat, did you notice he talks about the feral
cat that
cats
was frozen outside to the thing?
Fairview cats were also at great risk in the winter from cars, but not for the reasons you think. It wasn't automobiles sliding on icy roads and running them over. Only loser cats died that way. What kind of sentence is that? He's judging the cats. He's like, these cats
saying,
are pussies.
Of course he's
a
cat.
Oh, I did it
guy.
Again. Oh, he's absolutely a cat guy.
I mean, weirdly though, cats are pure chaos.
They are.
There's nothing orderly about a cat. They are hell beasts.
These are my two cats, Nietzsche and Hegel. We sit here and they eat out of my hand. It brought me a mouse the other day. But like, what a weird sentence. If you think about that for a second, it's like, listen, it was so cold and icy, cats died a lot, but only loser cats died like that.
Yeah.
Did a dog write this?
Cat's natural that? Enemy.
What is that? Whose thought is that? And the editors never, I mean, this was like at the when he was really ascendant and before he'd gone kind of really quite crazy. They must have been like, who gives a shit what's in this book? Nobody
printing money.
Just fuck it. Here's a book.
Can I just point out that on the front, so Wikipedia page, front cover, the quote from The Spectator, one of the most important thinkers to emerge on the world stage for many years.
Yeah.
That's the blurb they put on the front of the book.
Yeah, he's on an incredible ego, not even an ego trip, it's an ego sojourn.
Do you guys know about his
super ego?
About his wife?
Well done. His wife? Tammy or whatever? No. What happened to Tammy?
Jordan Peterson has said that his wife has prophetic dreams, and she had a dream that it was 5 minutes to midnight on the doomsday clock, and the apocalypse was coming, and he's supposed to save the world, and he believes this to be the case.
Okay. I'm not doubting that that dream happened.
he believes in her
prophetic
dreams.
I just
doubt that
it was in her head and not his head.
Yeah.
So the doomsday clock run by the Association of Atomic Scientists. Yeah, it's been set at like 10 seconds to midnight since like the 1980s.
He's using Canadian time. Like, they're behind.
It's Nova Scotia time. It's a little...
They're doing a half hour Labrador ahead. Island where it's like half a hour off.
Is Larry...
There's really... It's a real fucking time zone. It's half an hour off from everything else.
Oh, there are some, isn't there somewhere there in South America it's like zones. 5 minutes off. Like there's some fucking ridiculous time zones out there.
It's the best place to run a marathon if you're trying to do better.
Yeah, you start the marathon and
across wow, the border. Wow, I shaved half an hour off my time.
So can we, I think the rules are fine. And I agree, Nate. It's kind of hard to know when the crazy things
literally
came up.
90% of every chapter could have been in any of the other chapters.
It's a choose your own adventure help book. You could just read it any page. It's like Cain's, maybe this is like Cain's jawbone. Like you could read the pages in any order. You have to figure them out.
I feel like there was a pamphlet and then he like put all the pages in, but he didn't bind them. And then someone dropped them and they just put them back in and said, that's probably fine.
Yeah, they just looked for sections with headings. And like, that's fucking, that's going over there. Oh, this is another, like, I really tried to understand this. I read this, this is the second time I read this fucking book. I read it when it came out. And I remember reading, oh, these are some, this is some good advice, every chapter heading, and then going, I don't know what's happening. To the
That's because so nothing's happening.
So I was trying to understand it, and I knew we'd have to talk about it, and I also know that some people are going to listen to this, and they're going to be very critical because they are fans or not fans of this guy. But I liked this sentence, because maybe you could tell me what this means. He's talking about parents and letting their kids act shitty in public.
Is this the don't let your kids do anything that you don't like?
Yeah, that's rule three, I believe, right?
No, that's rule five.
Oh, all right, thank God. We're making progress, finally.
So well, he is right that people do a shitty job raising their kids. That is 100% true.
Yeah.
They definitely do. But he says, because they did not dare to teach him, this random couple in public or whatever, what no means, he had no conception of the reasonable limits enabling maximal toddler autonomy. Okay. It was a classic example of too much chaos breeding too much order and the inevitable reversal. What the fuck does that mean? I really don't know what that means. Like, I think a lot of his writing is what he thinks a smart person sounds like, you know, because that does sound like a smart person to say something like, well, it's too much this making too much that, which, and of course the opposite. And then you go, oh yeah, okay. But then I feel like, what's the fucking dumb guy from Silicon Valley, Baghetti? I feel like, oh, okay, sure. Like, that's how I felt whenever he would say something like that. Oh, if you say so.
A lot of the stuff about him, like, the reviews are always just like, he says so many things in his talks and his books that, like, they sound smart. So you think he's smart. But if you, like, really take the time, it's like, this, he's not saying anything.
Yeah. It's really vapid, a lot of it. Or it's just these assertions piled on top of each other. It's just vapid. Anyway. So the rule, like, raise your kids so they don't act like kids you don't like. That's also good advice, though much easier said than done.
Yeah. But it's also, the rule is worded in such a way that it could be utilized by people who are not great to, like, because the rule is do not let your children do anything that makes you dislike them, like be gay.
Does he say that?
No. He does not say that, but he doesn't love the gays.
Does he say it in the book?
He doesn't say it in this book. He does a lot of this shit where he'll like lead you to a point and then just kind of let it drop and let people like make their own conclusions from things he's led you to. I saw this talk he did where it was
if
like
you could follow him to a conclusion, then you're doing better than I did most of these chapters.
Yeah, he does this shit. Like there was a thing he did where he was talking about, you know, the military needs people, you know, during a war, and, you know, they need to get a lot of people, but they need to have a cutoff, and they decided that anyone with an IQ of 83 and under 83 or whatever...
I've seen this clip.
...could not get into the military. First of all, that's not true.
They let Forrest Gump in, so...
He made that up. It's not true.
He's a genius.
And then is like... And, you know, the military is a good, you know... representation of the overall public, which it's not.
When there was a draft, maybe.
Yeah, but, you know, maybe. It's not now. And he's like, and you know, so you figure those deviations, you know, that's a one out of every 10 people is worthless. But what are we going to do about that? There's no answer. It's like, you know, it sounds like you're saying there's, I don't know.
I'm going to say it. I've been on mass transit recently. It's way more than one in 10 is useless. Holy fucking shit.
Also, dude. Mass transit is not a good representation of the general public. It's people who have to take trains.
There's hope then. There's hope. It's holy shit, man. It's brutal.
But also, it turns out that 83 IQ thing came from one particular place, which was studies done.
B. Peterson Academy?
Studies done by an American Nazi. Then, you know, and they're Nazi
science.
Sounds
like a man of the world. What was an American Nazi?
You know, he wasn't a German 30s? Dude. He was like an American guy who was part of the, you know, he was into the whole Nazi spiel back in
like guy
50s.
In the Bund in the 30s? Like those
I forget
Nazis
it was like the 40s.
Or like a neo-Nazi.
It was like a 40s, 50s Nazi.
I don't think there were any open Nazis in the 40s and 50s in America at that point. Or not many.
No, not many.
Oh, there were. There actually.
Were some. Yeah.
Oh, that's unfortunate. I mean, I know Jordan Peterson gets accused often of being a Nazi sympathizer or just blatantly a Nazi, which I think is careless. But he does careless with facts too. So maybe it's warranted in some cases.
Yeah. I mean, when he does shit like that, like do I think he's a fucking all out Nazi? I don't know. I don't think so. But when he does stuff like that, like he's claiming to be this, you know, great scientist, great mind. If you're just going to pull shit out of your ass and then not try and figure out where the data you're misusing is from, that's either really lazy or sketch.
Well, I think he's cherry picking. You know, he's doing what a lot of shitty thinkers do or shitty writers or whatever do.
Yeah.
He has an idea and he's like, let me go find the data to support
my idea. He's starting from
what
he
I don't
wants.
Care where it came from.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's not scientific.
He did he's put out it was a tweet about like, this is the biggest study on diversity and what it does. And of course, you know, the study says diversity is horrible. And the guy who wrote the article was Steve Saylor, who was the founder of the Saylor strategy, which Donald Trump used, which was, you don't have to appeal to the middle. You have to go hard to the far right, shitty racists. If you get enough of them on board,
you have to turn out the base in order
to turn
to
out
win.
The base as extreme as you can. You'll get enough of the other stuff and you'll win. And this was one guy's misreading of a study that many people wrote articles about. And the study was basically like, diversity is, you know, it's weird at first, but like after a little while, not even that long, everyone's pretty okay with it and things end up pretty all right. But, you know, he once again says, like, look at this article written by this perfectly reasonable guy who's definitely not a Nazi.
Well, again, I think you're using the word Nazi cavalierly there, but he is, because racist and Nazi are not synonyms.
No, but he does hate the Jews too. maybe Steve Saylor is not a member of the Nazi party, but
I'm not saying
he is
specific, but there is a difference.
He's a neo-Nazi.
I do think this is part of the problem with the people who have been most vociferous against Jordan Peterson is when they go, he's a Nazi, like 7 years ago, when the guy was like, you should clean your room and, you know.
No, yeah, it's
women
not
are stupid.
That straightforward.
And it was like, chill out. Because what that does, especially in the age of social media and polarization and all these other words we're supposed to use, is that just divides people instantly along lines that then makes conversation impossible. I'm going to say, you're a Nazi. He's a Nazi. And he's like, well, fuck you. I'm not talking to you. And that's really unhelpful.
Yes.
And Nazi means something pretty specific. Now, I'm not defending Steve Saylor, whoever the fuck he is, or Jordan Peterson, for that matter. I just feel like...
calling him a Nazi is too straightforward. But he
it's
does...
it's inaccurate.
He does more often than he should end up asserting the viewpoints that might agree with Nazis. Or any racist or any anti-Semite.
Right. I'm curious. I don't know if Jordan Peterson's comments a bit about Israel, though, but I bet he's not been pro-Palestine.
No, definitely not. Yeah.
So, and again, not to defend him, but to just say, like, yeah, I feel like, you know, people need to just, it does quickly become a boy crying wolf thing when everybody's a Nazi. And that is like, you know, the thing that's very, especially on like Twitter, which is where Jordan Peterson's very active.
Yeah, he
it's
is.
The most ridiculous
Until he got
people
banned.
Who are still on there.
He did once say, you have to admire Hitler. But, you know, he said he was an organizational genius, which he was not.
Which he was. No, he wasn't.
Subjectively not.
No, this is. I mean, that's like a really bad version of the Mussolini made the trains run on time. No, again, I don't think Jordan Peterson is a Nazi per se. I think he's a guy who doesn't think very critically anymore.
No,
and so he's gotten to a point where he could just think anything. He's like, you know, I think the jam should go first and then the butter on the toast. And then he's going to say that
that's chaos.
As if it's the fucking dogma that was handed down. You know, I was like on the other tablet Moses had.
He does,
you know,
believe he's so a prophet.
Confident
so.
In himself. So he's going to come out then and be like, you know, this is the only way. And then he'll find some obscure thing to kind of support it. And like,
well,
look at this.
Horace and
lemurs
Set,
hate jelly.
He talked about Horace and Set in this book constantly. And it never had anything to do with anything.
He should have named that section Horace Set Match. Would have been a great name. No, he just mentions mythological characters and never. And anybody who studies mythology, you know, like you when you're a kid and you read a book when it's like these are the myths of Rome or the myths of the Norsemen or whatever, and they tell fun little stories. But then you take a class on that, and then like, what do scholars think? It's fucking so complicated, and they're like, well, this was meant to be understood this way. This was a literal thing. This was just a story.
Nope, it's the one thing he thinks.
Here's the other story that contradicts it entirely, told 6 miles away at the same time. And you're like, oh, because you have to understand their worldview. He leaves all of that nuance and detail out, and he just read like the Encarta article on that.
He found an old
CD-ROM. I understand them. Oh yeah,
something Encarta else he only read. Something else I feel like he only read the Encarta article on was The Gulag Archipelago by Alexander Solzhenitsyn. Even though he cited it like 20 times in the book, so among other things, he says like,
"What the fuck is that?"
So okay, so well, okay, he explains it in the book.
Yeah, that's not going to help me.
Explains the book, so it's a guy who's literally in Soviet gulags and managed to either escape or his. Either escape or he wrote the book while in there. So we're just explaining just what the conditions are like and sort of like the horrible oppression about everything. And I have not read it, but
it's
the book
long.
The book was smuggled to the West in 1975 and became an instant hit. And then he won the Nobel Peace Prize or Nobel Prize in Literature. But Jordan Peterson says, well, this is the book that showed the evil of the Soviet Union and is at least, you know, partially responsible for, you know, the breakup of the Soviet Union. And it's like, well, actually, I don't think so. Now, I wasn't there at the time, but I feel like everybody in the West knew how oppressive the Soviets were. Like, I mean, sure, the book laid it out in a lot of detail, especially with political prisoners. But everybody knew it already.
Yeah, it wasn't a surprise.
Yes, exactly. Like, wasn't also, that like pretty obvious?
Also, the book was published in Russia in the late 60s, and the Soviet Union would just stagger on another 20 plus years.
But it was the beginning.
Definitely,
of the end.
Definitely responsible for taking down the Soviet Union. Yeah,
it was only at that point, like, two-thirds through its time existing. So it's like no guarantee. It's yeah, that's in assertion as well. He won the Nobel Prize in Literature, by the way, just I confirmed.
Well, this is he also completely
Solzhenitsyn, not fucking Jordan Peterson.
No, he also completely misreads either willingly somehow or just by accident somehow, the whole Orwell thing. Where he's like, he wrote Orwell's Road to Wigan Pier, where he's like, this is where Orwell decided that socialism was no good because socialists
Orwell, like,
just
died
hate the
a
rich.
Socialist, right? He was like a fucking.
He was a fucking. He fought in the Spanish Civil War.
Yeah.
He got shot in the neck. But, like,
right.
The thing he says of Orwell is like.
Was he injured or Orwell afterwards?
He was eventually well, actually.
Oh, I'll go get it. By George, I was worried there.
But he says, you know, Orwell decided socialism is no good because socialism doesn't actually care about the poor. They just hate the rich, and that's not a good way to be. But that's not even what he says in the book. The thing he says in the book is like, look, don't judge socialism by the actions and beliefs of socialists. That's stupid. That's literally the exact thing you're not supposed to do, which is the opposite of what Peterson says. So, like, care what you will about socialism and George Orwell's perspective on it. This is another thing he just either deliberately lies about or just does not fucking know what he's talking about. He does this every chapter. There's something he's like, that's just, it's either an assertion or objectively wrong.
Well, I think, you know, Peterson probably did the same thing a lot of people do, is they read 1984 and they're like, yeah, Orwell's against totalitarianism. And then they go, oh, but he's into socialism. That muddies the waters for me. I thought he was really clearly on my side of this issue.
Well, he was.
I'm going to ignore that bit.
He was actually an anarchist, so he was actually against totalitarianism. Well, he fought for the anarchists in the war.
Well, I mean, you could be against totalitarianism and still be pro, especially if you're talking about the idealized form of socialism, not, you know, what had happened in Russia or something like that.
Well, that's communism. Different thing.
I watch Fox News. They're the same thing.
I mean, that was the whole Spanish Civil War was...
They're both Democrats, Jimmy.
The Spanish Civil War was the fascists against the communists and the socialists and the anarchists who could not get along, like always.
But it was in Spain, so they had a three-hour nap every day during the war.
Yeah, I mean, the nap is very important.
That's why the war took 3 years.
Got to wait for the paella to cook. but this is all because my favorite rule, the dumbest rule, rule number 10, be precise in your speech. The least self-aware rule I've ever seen in my fucking life. And honestly, that's not even what the rule is about when he describes it. It's like, what it boils down to is, if there's a problem, confront it directly. Don't talk around it. Like, that's not even what this rule says, you bitch.
No, it was kind of funny, especially the second time reading it, to see. I know he's done everything but this, which just goes to show man's flawed nature and that there's still the influence of feminine chaos in our lives.
Well, this is also, you know, his whole spiel about, like, clean your room before you, like, give anybody else advice. Like, if you don't have your shit together, who are you to be talking? Which is, I guess, not exactly fair, but I get it.
I'm pretty sure we already had a version of that, which is people who live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones.
Yeah. But also, Jordan Peterson does not have his shit together. He was at this time a full-blown benzo addict.
Yeah, he went into a coma, right?
He went to Russia to be put into a medically induced coma for a treatment that's illegal in Canada so that he could get him off the benzo addiction.
That's because in Canada, with their socialized medicine, he would have to wait 9 months for it, Jimmy.
For his coma chamber.
They would have just tried to euthanize him. That's what Canada does. So they can give all of his things to an immigrant.
Well, this is also when he was in the midst of his meat-only diet.
Yeah, that was the real issue. He's on all the pain medications because of this incredible
constipation. No, benzos are anxiety meds.
Oh, well, you know what? He strikes me as an anxious guy. He probably should be on some of them.
Honestly, like, he's definitely a guy, because he talks about, like, how he's been sick for a long time. Like, he's clearly a guy who's got, like, some real issues with depression. He talks about self-hatred in this book, like, too many times for it to not be like, oh, I don't know, man. You all right? I'm a little... If you weren't such a fucking asshole, I'd be a little worried about you.
I think he does the thing any unself-aware psychologist is going to do. They're going to be like, you know how people do that thing where they think about how much they hate themselves?
It's like,
no, dude, we don't do that.
You know how when you wake up and you just wish that you were could go to sleep again, or that you would never wake up? You know that feeling you have every day of your life?
You know when you have that recurring dream about your grandmother's bush?
Well, the fucking paintbrush pussy.
She has a paintbrush Wilford Brimley mustache bush on your grandma's old wizened gash.
I had forgotten about that, and now I have to think of it again.
Oh, it's so funny. It's like, and you know how you feel a little weird still getting an erection from that dream? You know that thing? He does that a lot. He's trying to universalize his experience.
Universal abject self-loathing. You know how all of humanity is trash and we should all be dead? Like, I don't know, man. Also, in Rule 11, do not bother children while they are skateboarding.
Oh, yeah. Which is a bizarre rule.
Terrible rule. But there's a line here, really, really perfect, really encapsulates the book. beware of single cause interpretations and beware the people who purvey them.
Well, chaos is not one single cause. I like when he talks about the guy who gave a TED talk, a shitty TED talk in that chapter. So the guy is supposed to give a TED talk, or at least according to Jordan Peterson, supposed to give a TED talk about his work in, you know, cutting edge science shit with touchscreen technology. And it, quote, he spoke instead about the threat human beings pose to the survival of the planet. Like Chris, like far too many people. I think Chris is his friend that killed himself earlier in the chapter.
Chris was Christ's first name.
Like Chris to his friends, to his bros. Like far too many people, he had become anti-human to the core. And I think this is a big part of Peterson's thing. Is like he sees, quote, liberals and their criticism of, you know, corporations or government or whatever thing they're criticizing, warranted or not. And he interprets that as, what's that word, misanthropic or whatever. Like, they hate people. They just hate people because we're people, and people did that thing they don't like, so they just hate people, which is fucking stupid and childish. But this, I feel like him, this is him directly saying that, right? When a guy gets up there who's a scientist and he's like, dude, we got a climate change is a problem or whatever he's saying. And he's like, see, he hates people. Like, that's
I found the thing he said about climate. It's really beautiful. I wrote it here. So, climate and everything are the same word. And that's what bothers me about the climate change types. It's like, this is something that bothers me about it, technically. It's like climate is about everything. Okay, but your models aren't based on everything. Your models are based on a set number of variables. So that means you've reduced the variables, which are everything, to that set. Well, how did you decide which set of variables to include in the equation if it's about everything? Because your models cannot and do not model everything. And then Joe Rogan says, what do you mean by everything? He says, we have to change everything. The same with the word environment. That word means so much that it actually doesn't mean anything. Like when you say everything, like it's meaningless. What's the difference between environment and everything? There's no difference. It's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
That's like saying, we can't trust this study on red light, if we should put a red light on this camera, because I don't know what the bus driver ate for lunch. Yeah. So how could I know if a red light is going to help with traffic?
If you limit the variables, you're ruining science. It's also, he's on a video saying, I'm not a math and physics guy. I don't really get math, so I don't know. You have to explain it to me.
Yeah. He became a guru for many people. And this book really cemented that, or maybe was the peak of that, where all of a sudden a lot of people were looking to him for advice on how to live. And if people are looking to you for advice on how to live their entire lives, you're going to have to talk about shit you don't know that much about. And notice none of the rules were be humble. So he's like, oh yeah, I'll figure that out too.
No, humble is a feminine trait. It's chaos. Because if you're a man, you have to assert yourself because women only want to fuck alphas.
Vaginas are humble because you keep them inside usually. It's inherently the humility is inherent.
This is also a man who said that he had a sip of cider once and didn't sleep for 25 days.
Was it Martinelli's? Because that shit's got a lot of sugar in it.
Yeah, it was. 25 days. 25 days worth of sugar.
So chapter 9 had my favorite gibberish part. Chapter 9, rule 9 rather, is assume the person you are listening to might know something you don't. And the only thing he talks
not
about
bad
is
advice. It isn't.
Not bad advice at all.
Yeah.
That's actually very good advice. We should always be doing that, right? We should not just ignore people. And it's hard. That's actually pretty hard to do because a lot of times you kind of go, that guy looks like an asshole. I don't care what he says. Or if it's a woman, you just know she has nothing to say because, you know, she's chaos.
That's not her place to talk.
It's, yeah. Where is she? She's supposed to be fetching my Tim Hortons.
She's supposed to be out there never having been oppressed because
they
chose to be subservient.
Where are my bloody cheese curds? But he interviews his patient and she's like, Miss S. And he's like, she was a mess and a whore.
Oh, this is the lady who blacked out. Is like, I think I was raped.
I think I was raped last night. And he's like, well, tell me about what is rape? And
yeah.
It's like, ooh, that's not a good start.
Rape means everything, you know, so.
And so, yeah, I can imagine this session, right? When he's like, well, were you drinking? Because rape is just grape without the G, and that's what's made into wine. She's
like, and wine comes from Cain and Abel. Because Cain was a real whiner.
That's really good. So he says to her at one point, or he thinks about her mid-session, when she's like, I don't know if I like consented to that sex. And this happened a few times. And he goes, you are so vague and so non-existent. You are a denizen of chaos and the underworld. The fuck does that mean?
Yeah, what the fuck does that
mean? Shut your mouth, you whore harpy. You don't know anything.
This is also the chapter where he said, psychotherapy is not advice. Advice is what you get when the person you're talking with about something horrible and complicated wishes you would just shut up and go away. This dude has no fucking friends? What? Holy shit.
He doesn't. His one friend was Chris, who killed himself.
Yeah.
But I was thinking throughout this book of how he just strings together things and like takes a line out of context to prove some weird case. And it's all like a house of cards, right? Once you point, like, that's not what Taoism says, or that's not what that, you know, that's not the only interpretation of that biblical story, et cetera. And I was thinking, I was trying to play a game in my head, like, what would be the most ridiculous thing you could use to also build a set of rules to live by out of? And I came up with the barred meatloaf.
Mm.
And so I was trying to think, how would Jordan Peterson explain his ways of life using just meatloaf? And I said, well, you know, when meatloaf says 2 out of 3 ain't bad, he is, you know, extorting us to recognize that what we cannot change. Well, this is the same as the Serenity Prayer and the prayer to recognize the things we cannot control. It's in the bloody Bible. And yet later on, he says, you took the words right out of my mouth. What cannot be said because it's understood. It's not in the mouth any longer. It's in the proverbial mouth and therefore ear of the listener and speaker. Jung said that. But then you have to escape like one bat out of hell would, leaving the chaotic world, the feminine world behind for anywhere else, showing that the only place we crave besides chaos is, of course, the masculine order. And we should avoid the feminine and the disorderly in order to find a loaf of one's, you know, man's primal meat. But then...
But I won't do that.
But hold on, I can't get there. But paradise is indeed still visible, if only by the dashboard light, highlighting the Joseph Campbell symbol of the hero's journey that must be traversed when we are indeed all revved up with no place to go, because the journey isn't just one of miles, of physical miles, it's of internal spectral miles, as all true journeys are. But chaos is the thing, is the one thing I wouldn't do for love. I would do anything but that. And it's like, that was more fun than reading the book, was trying to think of Jordan Peterson talking about meatloaf.
I mean, he had this whole fucking spiel about Frozen in this book. I must have been
sleeping at that point.
This was in the Don't Bother Children When They're Skateboarding chapter. It might be objected, as it was with Disney's most recent and deeply propagandistic Frozen, that a woman does not need a man to rescue her. That may be true, and it may not. It may be that the only woman...
That may be true, and it may not. But I'm going to go on anyway.
It may be that only the woman who wants or has a child needs a man to rescue her, or at least to support and aid her. In any case, it is certain that a woman needs consciousness to be rescued, and as noted above, consciousness is symbolically masculine and has been since the beginning of time.
It's sure. I can only imagine what
he cited a bunch of Disney movies to prove something, and I honestly stopped paying attention because it's like, you're using Disney movies to prove something. He talked about the Little Mermaid and is like, but the Disney movie, the Little Mermaid. It's like, you know what? I've read the original. None of that shit's in there.
No, I mean his problem with Disney movies is that they teach little girls that, you know, that they're people.
The Little Mermaid is known for having several octoroon shrimp singing in it, and that is a problem as well.
He also called Fight Club the most fascist popular film made in recent years, with the possible exception of the Iron Man series.
But he missed Starship Troopers.
Dude, that was like a big thing on social media like 2 weeks ago. And
Starship Troopers?
I can't remember. Yeah.
That comes up every year or two.
And people arguing over what it meant and what Paul Verhoeven
does is satire.
But then people are getting into arguments over how many like Uno reversals of satire are happening in that game.
Neil Patrick Harris is wearing a fucking SS officer's uniform.
I don't remember what we said in the book episode we did for that.
I mean, the book does not involve the Nazi uniforms, but like Verhoeven, the movie is definitely a satire of the book and fascism.
Right. And people are confused by that. I don't know.
This is the guy who made RoboCop, and everyone thought, yeah, shoot all those bad guys. This is the way cops should be. Like, that's absolutely not the point of RoboCop.
Should use lasers.
Yeah.
So, other rules, just the other rules, so you don't have to ever read this book, because you shouldn't. You should read just the Quora article. The last rule I thought was the dumbest.
I mean, the rule is dumb, but the message behind it is okay, but kind of sad.
Pet a cat if you see one on the street. Yeah, don't be a pussy.
What it boils down to is, like, take the good times when you can, because every day you wake up hating yourself and you wish everyone was dead.
Well, he only can admit that just because he's following rule number 8, which is tell the truth, or at least don't lie, which I think is the name of a country western song.
I mean,
tell me the truth, parentheses, or just don't lie.
Pet a cat is fucking stop and smell the roses.
Yeah, oh, every one of these is something. Yeah. Pursue what is meaningful, not what's expedient. Set your house
on your children. Which is just how to stop giving a fuck or whatever. You know, focus on the things you care about. Sure.
All these books, I mean, he says, I'm trying to find the quote because I highlighted so many things that I can't remember why I highlighted them now because they're just gibberish. But there's a thing in here. Oh, here it is. Our ancestors worked out very sophisticated answers to such questions, but we still don't understand them very well. What? You know, those ancient Greeks figured this shit out. We just don't know. It's all Greek to me. I don't know what that meant.
I liked this one, which was, this is not to say that Christianity, even in its incompletely realized form, is that Judaism? I don't know. Was a failure. Quite the contrary. Christianity achieved the well-nigh impossible. The Christian doctrine elevated the individual soul, placing slave and master and commoner and nobleman alike on the same metaphysical footing, rendering them equal before God and the law. Christianity insisted that even the king was only one among many. For something so contrary to all apparent evidence to find its footing, the idea that the worldly power and prominence were indicators of God's particular favor had to be radically de-emphasized.
Wait, I didn't even understand that line. I mean, it kind of made sense up until the end there.
Yeah, I was just like, sure, I guess, but also Christianity didn't really bring everybody on equal footing for the entire
That was the history. Message of the early Christians. That's why it spread like wildfire through Rome.
Yeah, but didn't last that way.
Well, no, but that was, I mean, that's what he's saying. In that prototypical form or whatever he said, it's unfinished form. Stage 3 Christianity. It was only when they were going around the beta, still, the beta testing. In the catacomb. Yeah, the beta. Yeah. The
beta cucks.
The catacomb. Oh, absolutely. They went to hell. former Jews, now Christians hiding in the catacombs. Big part of their message was, in the afterlife, you all go to heaven, which wasn't the case for many other Mediterranean religions before. You either went to a shitty place.
Y'all went to Hades.
Or you went nowhere.
Which was also equal, though.
But it wasn't always equal. Or it was just a repeat of whatever life on Earth was. So if you were a shitty person, poor, you know, whatever, here, you get that again. If you were a king, you get to be a king again. So it was just more of the same. And by offering people, say, hey, this life will it's not going to get better. Just that ship has sailed, or that trireme has sailed. Instead,
but the next life,
round two, it's going to be awesome. You win next. You come in on top. People fucking loved that. I can't, and they had nothing else to do to disprove it.
No, it's hard to prove.
Like, oh, great, this is so much better than worshiping Mithras, and then they just fucking did it. So we can go with any other key things to make fun of in the book?
Oh, here. Was it really a good thing, for example, to so dramatically liberalize the divorce laws in the 60s? Horror and terror lurk behind the walls provided so wisely by our ancestors.
Is that the next sentence?
No, there's one sentence in between that, but that's the same paragraph.
Jesus.
He's like basically saying, you know, why do we let women get divorces when their husbands were beating them? The ancestors set this up because if you change things from what the old people did, it's just chaos. And also, women can't have rights.
Yeah. Even if there is a point potentially to be made that, you know, and this is where you start sounding like a fucking men's rights activist, that the divorce laws are written in a particular way that favors women over men in certain, like in terms of like child custody and stuff like that. And I'm not saying they shouldn't, so please don't think that's what I'm saying. But when you say that, when you say like, but come on, aren't those divorce laws not so great? It's like, yeah, but like, yeah, what would you replace them with? What would you change it to? And for the one example you could find where like, yeah, that really fucked that guy, how many terrible things did it avoid? You know, that's a trait. What was the trade-off there? It's not like the laws are written. It's like, this is our chance. We're going to slowly chip away at the men's rights and slowly relegate them to just being beta lobsters with messy rooms.
Yeah, I mean, that is what he's worried about.
But if you want to criticize them, there are probably some places where you could say, hey, that part doesn't seem appropriate or fair in our modern world. Maybe it made sense in 1970 or something. But when you don't do any of that, when you just kind of throw out there, these laws are wrong and the ancestors would weep and roll over in their peasant graves, it's a fucking really careless thing to say. But he's not interested in that kind. He's interested in like wild fucking nuance about Cain and Abel.
But and not much nuance on women's rights.
No, not at all. I mean, it is the women's part, I kind of didn't catch the first time through the book because I was just trying to understand anything. But it really is true that there's really nothing nice about women in the book, or like, because he just assumes from the beginning they are chaotic.
You know, for all the criticisms of him, I do not like Jordan Peterson. I think he's a shitty guy. I don't think he's like a fucking all-out Nazi. I don't think he's like a super racist or anything. He definitely does not like women, or thinks they should not be in any way equal to dudes.
Yeah, I think if I were to guess, and this is just to pretend to defend him for a second, I think what he would say is the kind of thing, they're different.
Oh, he is 100%, 1,000% into like traditional gender roles.
And that difference is important, and it has to do with biology, and it has to do with ancient, ingrown, evolutionary, whatever shit.
Well, and also order and chaos.
Well, yeah, but that order and chaos is there for a reason, and that's our roles, whether we like them or not. I think he would say something like that, which I don't...
I saw a thing where he was asked, like, are you okay with gay marriage?
What's gay?
No, it was weird. He was like, well, the first thing he said was, like, I would be against it if the cultural Marxists were for it.
Which is kind of a very Mao thing to say, by the way. One of the lines in the Red Book is, we should be against whatever our enemies stand for, we should be against.
I mean, he is very much about that life. He is very much like, if these people that I don't like say something, then I don't like that thing. But then after that, he said, you know, well, the issue is like, you know, I believe in the, you know, tradition of marriage. And if that brings more people into the social fabric and bring them into, you know, quote unquote, regular life, then I guess I'm fine with that. You know, my concern would be that, you know, with regard to children, that say, you know, you have two parents, like two men or two women, and they have a child of the opposite sex, and that child has no one to model themselves after, and, you know, children of single parents just don't do as well. And it's just like, what?
Because the two gay parents fuse into one.
Yeah, he's like...
fusion dance.
Two gay parents are basically the same thing as having just one parent. And I was like, that's...
He's not... Yeah, it's fucking dumb.
Yeah, he hates women.
The kid's just going to want to be a top always. It's very, you know. I can't wait to read the second book, because the second book I tried to read when it came out like 2 years ago or so.
Is it worse than this?
And I actually tried to listen to the audiobook, and I was like 15 minutes. And I was like, I have no idea what's happening. And I wanted to listen to it. It wasn't a punishment. I can't wait for that. That's going to be, because there at that point, nope. If anybody edited this book or was like, hey man, maybe, you know, rein it in a bit. That is completely gone for round two.
I'm sure you could just subscribe to Daily Wire Plus, and he'll read the book to you, or just say it again.
Oh, he has his like specials, which is like dragons are women and fight them and Muslims or something. I don't know what his new series is. But I refuse to. I will not. I subscribe to just about every streaming service,
but not Daily Wire Plus.
I don't think I need Daily Wire Plus. No.
No,
I'll subscribe to that right after I become like a patron of like Chapo Trap House or whatever the fucking mega communist podcast one is. But so, who should read the book, Nate?
Well, obviously, no one. Although, if you ever thought Jordan Peterson was full of shit, and you want to read it just to make sure, then you should read it. But you could. Also, read the introduction in chapter one and get everything you need.
If you just read the chapter titles and then just yell Horace, Set, Cain, Abel over and over again out loud in your room, you'll get the same experience.
You might orgasm faster that way.
That's the only way I can these days.
Oh, yeah. Horace, Set, Match, and then just jizz everywhere. You're like, I love that.
Well, this was a punishment book. I was definitely punished.
Did you feel punished? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I hated this. I hate Jordan Peterson. I feel like you guys were also punished, though. So, you know.
That's the game we play. Like, we have to punish ourselves, too. It's like our rule for life.
It's a limiting factor. Because like, there were some things I came up with that was like, man,
I don't want to do that.
That would suck for so much for Jimmy. But also, I'd have to read it. And, oh, God. So there are limits.
I have an idea for next year, for this Christmas already.
Is it Maps of Meaning?
I thought of Maps of Meaning.
With those, I saw the pictures of the diagrams in that book that are just the picture version of these sentences.
Yeah. it's like, did you ever read, what the fuck? The Arrival, that movie? It was a short story, yeah. Too, by Ted Chiang.
Yeah. I saw that.
Where they talk about how the aliens write in weird ways because they like view time differently.
They see all of time.
That's what those diagrams look like. They're a sentence written in that fucking alien language.
They look like someone on acid doing a collage.
It's like a mandala made by a dictionary. I don't need colors. I have enough words, thanks. They're just crazy.
Well, I'm not looking forward to the next 12.
I remember listening. I listened to some podcast where someone was interviewing Jordan Peterson. Oh, it was Michael Shermer's podcast, the guy from the American Skeptics Society. He's like, yeah, I tried to read your first book. I couldn't get through it. He just did that right to him. I was like, wow, it must be really shitty. And then I said, so like, oh, yeah, it is.
And it was.
Yeah. So what a beta cuck would say. But the next one's going to be worse.
Oh, I have no doubt that'll be worse.
But the rules are good. So, you know, just go to Amazon, preview the book, and read the table of contents.
Or just, you know...
And that's better.
Any, like, nice saying your grandparents once told you, that you already know these things.
And if it's the racist things your grandparents told you, they might be almost said in the book somewhere else.
Yeah, they're also in there, too.
Yeah, there's nothing earth-shattering in the rules.
The thing I read about Jordan Peterson that I think of every time is... For his talks, for his books, is what's true isn't new, and what's new isn't necessarily true.
Wait, that's
anything in here. Anything in here that's true is something you've heard before. It's nothing groundbreaking.
I see.
Anything he asserts and is some new information probably isn't true.
That's probably true, though. To be fair, about any self-help book.
Oh yeah, yeah, they're all like because this. Except they're shorter. And they don't hurt me as much,
and they're more like, you know, you can do it. This one's like, you hate yourself.
This one's like that, except it's, you can do it, unless you're a woman. In that case, don't.
If you hate yourself, especially more once a month, this book is not for you. I think it's what he says in the epilogue somewhere. It's implied.
Yeah.
So I'm done defending him because that wasn't pleasant. But I don't like doing that. But yeah, we have to do this one more time. So yeah, I'm already thinking of a different punishment book for next year, and it will not be the last Jordan Peterson book. Though if he comes out with the next dozen rules, we have to do it at this point.
Always eat your Pop-Tarts face down.
You know, I've actually found the Quora post at some point, like what the other rules are. And they're just like...
Don't spoil it.
Some of these are... I mean, again, they're all fine. I found them. I found the 42 rules. And they're all the ones we... Like, pay attention. That's a rule. Like, that's... You needed to say that one? Be careful who you share bad news with. This one, I think, is absolutely wrong. Nothing well done is insignificant. Listen, you tell that to the guy who masturbated successfully in the back of the bus. I don't know how significant that was.
It was significant to him.
Dress like the person you want to be. That's dress for success. Like you started with it. Just change.
Yeah, dress for the job you want.
But hey, look at this one. Do not transform your wife into a maid. Parentheses, you should marry a maid from the beginning.
But the rule after that is do not trans anything.
Yeah, trick question, trick rule. There is no such thing as trans. So Nate, I think we did pretty well. I think we punished Jimmy a good amount.
I think we punished him, yeah. Look still, what you made me do, Jimmy.
I don't know if we'll have another. We have to see how bad the book Jimmy got for us this year is. But if we have
mine's at least short
conspiracy next year,
I don't remember what it is.
Oh, it's we're reading it very soon.
It's Scott Adams one.
Scott Adams Religion War.
Scott Adams. That's right. The Dilbert guy.
It's like Dilbert versus the Muslims or something like that, right?
It's everyone versus the Muslims.
Oh, well, did ISIS write this book? In the meantime,
Tell us what you thought. Send us an email to drunkguysbookclub@gmail.com.
And after you're done cleaning your room, follow us on Twitter @drunkguysbsa.
Or go to Facebook and Instagram @drunkguysbookclub.
And if you want to help the podcast out, don't continue petting that cat in the street. Go to patreon.com/drunkguysbookclub or leave us a review or tell someone to check out the podcast and tell them you like it. Or don't lie. Tell the truth, but don't lie. Tell them you like the podcast.
And you can also find us by going on a quest to determine what the meaning behind Cain and Abel was, because what it is the difference between a sausage McMuffin and an egg McMuffin, which is clearly Goodreads.com.
And check out the Hopped Up Network, a network of independent beer podcasters. And thanks for listening.